from the Holy Quran, recited by Ali Parisgar. God, the compassionate, the merciful. And how many a prophet has fought with whom were many worshippers of the Lord. So they did not become weak-hearted on account of what befell them in Allah's way, nor did they weaken, nor did they abase themselves. And Allah loves the patient. And their saying was no other than that they said, "Our Lord, forgive us our faults and our extravagance in our affair, and make firm our feet, and help us against the unbelieving people." So Allah gave them the reward of this world, and better reward of the hereafter. And Allah loves those who do good to others.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
This hour's top headlines. The UN raises the alarm over an Israeli plan to expand its genocide in Gaza, after the regime approved what it called the conquest of the Gaza Strip. Medical officials in Gaza say more than 16,000 children have been killed in the Israeli genocide, which remains one child, which means that one child has died every 40 minutes. And Iran strongly dismisses U.S.-Israeli threat against the country over Yemen's missile strike on the occupied territories, vowing a swift response to any adventurism. the stories that matter. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has raised the alarm over an Israeli plan to expand its genocidal operations in Gaza, warning it will inevitably lead to countless more civilians killed and the further destruction of Gaza. Guterres stressed that Gaza is and must remain an integral part of a future Palestinian state. Israel has approved a plan which it says will entail, quote, the conquest of the Gaza Strip and the holding of the territories. The plan comes amid growing concerns over the worsening humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza, with famine again looming after more than 2 months of a full Israeli blockade. The EU has also cautioned the plan would bring more suffering to Palestinian civilians, leaving large swaths of devastated strip without access to life-saving supplies. Well, now joining us live for more on this is Mr. Dawood Tab, columnist and for Palestine Pulse El Monitor, joining us there from Amman. I'd like to thank you very much for joining us. Let's go ahead. I want to start off, Mr. Khattab, with this situation. We have Guterres saying and warning that Gaza should remain a part of a Palestinian state. But what we're hearing from Ben-Gvir, what we're hearing from Smotrich, what we're hearing from Netanyahu is that they are planning on completely conquering Palestine. And according to Ben-Gvir, that no aid should be delivered at all, only to people who are willing to leave their ancestral land for their own benefit, according to Netanyahu. How would you describe the situation at the moment, Mr. Khattab?
Well, this is clearly a war crime, allowing a boycott of food and humanitarian aid to a population under your control is collective punishment, and it's a war crime. So Israelis now are trying to politicize the aid by controlling who gets the food and who doesn't get the food. The people in the south get the food, the people in the north don't get the food. Those who leave are allowed to leave. The Israelis are playing politics with people's human lives, and this is a total war crime that is possibly a genocide. What Israel is doing is taking the conflict with Hamas and applying it as a punishment to the entire Palestinian population. And as the Secretary General of the UN said, it is also attempting to deny Palestinians the right of self-determination by creating their own state on their own land.
Yes, yeah, so, Mr. Khattab, I mean, as you did mention, Israel does as it's as it likes, basically. I mean, who gave them the authority to even put these zones? We've seen previously the Israeli entity tell Palestinians in Gaza to move to these safe zones where there will be no attacks, and later target that exact safe zone with multiple casualties and deaths. Mr. Khattab, I do want to ask you, I mean, how does the situation in Gaza actually at the moment challenge the principles of international law, particularly regarding protection of civilians in conflict zones? I mean, where is the international community in stopping these atrocities?
Well, with the exception of the Secretary General, this is a scandal. The Western countries, the United States, the European countries that dream and speak all the time of the principles of international law, the rule of law, of human rights, is now silent when a population is being ethnically cleansed and is being denied basic food. You know, when ethnic cleansing happened in Bosnia, the U.S. fought against what was happening in Bosnia. So they are now silent, or basically their silence is complicity to the genocide and to the war crime of famine and denying people their right to food and their right to livelihood. So this is a punishment to entire population. They're saying they're fighting with Hamas, but they're fighting the entire Palestinian people and trying to deny Palestinian people the right of self-determination under the claim that they're fighting Hamas. They're not fighting Hamas. Hamas is not being fought. They're fighting against the population, civilian population, which is a violation of the Geneva Convention. And all the countries that signed the Geneva Convention have a responsibility to ensure that Israel lives up to its international obligations.
Yes, well, I'd like to thank you very much for joining us, Mr. Dawood Khattab, columnist for Palestine Pulse, El Monitor, joining us there from Amman. A pleasure to have you with us. Palestinian civilians are slaughtered in Gaza as Israeli military keeps pounding the blockaded territory with more indiscriminate air and artillery strikes. An airstrike targeted a residential building in Khan Yunis, southern Gaza, killing several Palestinians and injuring many others. Earlier, at least half a dozen Palestinians lost their lives after Israeli warplanes bombed a vehicle in the Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza. A separate strike on the Nusayrat camp claimed the lives of at least 9 people. The attacks come as lack of food is separately taking its toll on the Gaza population, with a 4-month-old infant dying of malnutrition. The latest fatalities push the death toll from the U.S.-Israeli genocide since October 2023 to more than 52,500, with over 118,600 others being injured. Well, now joining us for the latest updates is our correspondent, Ghada Ibrahim Al-Zabout. They're joining us from Gaza City. Ghada, last time you were with us, there was a lot of artillery fire, and it seems that the drones are pretty low overhead. According to reports we're receiving, we have some martyrs being reported that the Israeli entity is now attacking Beit Lahia, actually there in the Gaza Strip, in addition, of course, to its other continued atrocities. What details do you have for us from the ground, Ghada?
The situation remains very tense in all over the Gaza Strip, and particularly in Beit Lahia area. Beit Lahia is being attacked again in the last few minutes. An Israeli robot, explosive robot was blasted in Ashema area that injured many people and caused a huge destruction in the area. The artillery shelling continues on the Ashema area and on the whole of Beit Lahia. The live ammunition, the live shooting continues against the people who were there in Beit Lahia. So the situation is very tense there. A martyr was killed just an hour ago by an Israeli quadcopter shooting. So the martyrs are increasing, and the death toll increases every passing hour. Since the dawn of this morning until now, 7 people were killed in different airstrikes and in different Israeli assaults against the Palestinian people. So the Israeli airstrikes continue, and as you may hear in the background, the artillery shelling continues. The artillery shelling continues on not only on Beit Lahia, but on the eastern parts of the city of Gaza. It is very audible to me and to everyone around here in Gaza. The artillery shelling targets, and particularly the eastern parts of the city, where At-Tufah and Al-Shaja'iyah, Al-Zaytun neighborhoods, these areas where the Israeli occupation army is carrying out a ground operation and is expanding a ground operation. So Al-Shaja'iyah particularly is heavily affected of this artillery shelling since the very morning, and the whole of the Gaza city is also affected by the Israeli airstrikes around the hour. As for the humanitarian situation, as you mentioned, it is very catastrophic here. For 60 days now, the Israeli occupation, it closes all the entries of Gaza and prevents the entry of all medical supplies, aid, food, and fuel to the required for the hospitals, for example, and for all the basics of life, actually. So people cannot actually survive this starvation war, and this starvation war is affecting every single person here in Gaza. Everyone is affected heavily by this starvation war. Yesterday, the UNRWA announced that 70,000 children have been hospitalized for malnutrition. 58 of them died because of malnutrition, and 3,500 are threatened and to die, and their life is on a stake, actually. So the situation, and we are not talking about a looming starvation, we are not talking about looming famine, but the famine is taking place already, and the people are heavily affected by this war, by this starvation war, and they are also affected by the
Yes,
the,
uh,
the, uh, the, uh, the, continuous Israeli assault.
The sound that we just heard, could you explain to us what that was exactly?
Yeah, it was an artillery shell that targeted an area here. So you can hear it, and the people hear it very. This might have fallen on the eastern parts of the city of Gaza. I am now in the heart of Gaza, and the areas here are actually very very near and very limited. So when the artillery shelling is targeting the eastern parts, it is audible from the center of the city,
exactly,
and it is audible
exactly
for everyone.
Rada,
so
I
hear it from the eastern parts of the Gaza.
Rada, I would like one more thing from you, please, very briefly, if you could just simply explain where exactly are you in Gaza City?
Yeah, I am now in the heart of Gaza in Al-Mamadani Hospital. The Al-Mamadani Hospital was bombed 3 weeks ago by the Israeli warplanes, and it was actually rendered out of service. Now they are trying to rehabilitate the hospital again to reopen the gates in order to provide the medical care required for the population here. So, as I am now here in the old city of Gaza itself, this place is supposed to be very crowded with the people who are actually in very dire need for the medical treatment and the medical help. However, now the situation is out of service already because of the bombing, and they are trying to make some spaces for the after the bombing. I mean, some spaces to.
Yes,
more injuries,
exactly. Rada, it seems we are. It seems I'm going to have
continues.
To cut you off there, Rada. We are seeming to be facing some technical difficulties, but definitely we're going to get back to you, Rada. Ibrahim Azabut there joining us, our correspondent from Gaza City, for the latest developments later on. A harrowing report has been published by medical officials in Gaza detailing how children across a blockaded territory are falling victim to the U.S.-Israeli genocide. The Director General of Field Hospitals in Gaza says more than 16,000 children have been killed across the territory since the beginning of Israel's genocidal war in October 2023. The figure means that one child has died every 40 minutes over the past 17 months. The official said over 900 Palestinian children were killed before reaching their first birthday. He said there have been documented cases of children being killed while attempting to collect food aid from charitable soup kitchens directly targeted by Israeli airstrikes. He said Israel's blockade and closure of Gaza's crossings for over 2 months have exacerbated the health crisis. Many primary healthcare centers are shut down either due to direct bombardment or because they are located within evacuation zones. While Israeli forces continue their brutal attacks on two major refugee camps in the occupied West Bank, destroying more houses and infrastructure and ordering more people to evacuate, the regime's onslaught on the city of Jenin and its refugee camp has continued for over 100 days, with Israeli forces imposing a complete closure of the camp. Israeli forces have totally blocked access to the Jenin refugee camp as destruction operations continue. According to local sources, nearly 600 homes have been completely destroyed in the camp, while others are partially damaged and made uninhabitable. Severe damage has also been done to infrastructure. Palestinian families are being forcibly displaced, with local officials saying that the number of displaced persons from the camp and city has exceeded 22,000. Israeli forces also pressed ahead with demolition operations in the Nur Shamis refugee camp near the city of Tulkarem. Yemen's Ansarullah resistance movement has vowed to continue retaliatory operations against Israel after a joint U.S.-Israeli military operation injured 21 civilians in the Arab country. Ansarullah says warplanes raided a number of economic positions since Israel has failed to target Yemeni military sites. Israeli officials have confirmed warplanes hitting at least 9 positions in the port city of Hodeidah. U.S. fighter jets also pounded a cement factory in Bajin district in the same governance, and also areas in the capital Sana'a. A senior official of Ansarullah has vowed reciprocal measures against any Israeli aggression on Yemen. The joint U.S.-Israeli onslaught came just a day after Yemeni forces launched a missile strike on Ben Gurion Airport, disrupting flights to and from Israeli airports. Condemnations are pouring in following the latest wave of U.S.-Israeli airstrikes on Yemen, slamming the attacks as a brazen act of aggression. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman strongly condemned the strikes as a blatant crime and violation of all norms of international law. Smari Begay said joint airstrikes on Yemen also contravene the UN Charter, calling for urgent international action to stop U.S.-Israeli massacres in Muslim countries. The Hamas resistance movement, for its part, said the airstrikes amounted to state terrorism. It said Israel is trying to salvage its shattered image after its defense systems failed to intercept the Yemeni missile. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad said the attacks were a sign of the pain and humiliation that Israel feels due to Yemen's blockade on the regime. Lebanon's Hezbollah movement also condemned the aggression, calling it a war crime that violates all international laws. It emphasized that the attacks only strengthen Yemen's resolve to mount pressure on Israel through naval and aerial blockades. Please stay tuned. Goodbye for now.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among thy troops, are the victors, and place me in thy party, for thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among thy friends, for thy friends, no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an
the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household the good, the pure, and his household the good, the pure, and his companions the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless thou takes it away, and leave no enemy, and leave no enemy unless thou repels him. By means of, in the name of Allah, the best of the names, in the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is his anger, and I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is his good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from thee, O patron of beneficence.
The name of Marvast as a city with rich culture and amazing monuments shines in the history of three provinces of Iran, Yazd, Kerman, and Fars. There were times in history that Marvast belonged to Fars province, and there are many stories of the cultural, social, and political influences of Kerman province on this city and its people. Today, Marvast technically belongs to the culturally rich province of Yazd, but it certainly enjoys many characters that are inherited from all three neighboring provinces. People of Marvast have dedicated a day of the year to their city and invited us to visit this place for the first time, and together celebrate the rich history and cultural diversity of their hometown. Everything starts with a tour of the city.
In every city of Iran, there's some significant historical places that can take you back all the way to hundreds or thousands of years ago without me feeling old at all.
A circular fortress built a few hundred or perhaps thousands of years ago to protect the inhabitants of this region. Some historians claim that it was built during the Ilkhanid era, and some locals believe that it belongs to the pre-Islamic time. No matter in what exact period of time this magnificent structure was built, I believe the construction of Marvast Fortress was a great idea. This gigantic fortress and the Marvasti people who served here played an important role in protecting and saving many of the residential houses, public places, cultural monuments, and historical structures that we're supposed to visit during this trip. Some of those structures, like the Marvast Fortress, have become the symbols of this amazing adobe city. An adobe city in the central part of Iran that we, in company with some locals and tourists from other cities of Iran, are about to explore. Apart from iconic buildings and monuments, most Iranian cities still have some very old districts, with narrow alleys and old houses, all made with earthly materials, and some of them have been perfectly preserved. They have been preserved so today we can have some ideas about the people who were the inhabitants of these Iranian historic cities, like Marvast, which used to be a village back in the old days. We'll be right back.
before, when you were traveling in Iran, it was a bit difficult to experience the lifestyle of the local people of that area. Nowadays, because of this trend that started recently, and I mean the trend that people turning their historical houses to traditional hotels, even for a short period of time, you get a chance to live exactly like the people who lived here back in the old days. You get a chance to eat like them, to be served like them, to get treated like them, and to enjoy this beautiful life.
Historic houses of Marvast, like other cities in the central part of Iran, have their unique architecture, and they enjoy elements and features that you can only find in structures in the desert regions of Iran. Not all historic houses of Marvast have the same situation as the House of Chaharfast. Some are abandoned, some renovated and now being used as private houses, and some others have been restored and turned into local museums. After visiting the most iconic structure of Marvast and a couple of historical houses, the young people of the city surprised us by a performance, or let's say a kind of traditional sport which has roots in our history. It is called Varzesh Bastani, or heroic sport, which nowadays being performed to welcome visitors to most historical cities and places.
When we're thinking about Eastern culture, and specifically Iranian culture, image of the curve automatically comes to your mind. Curves are everywhere in Iranian architecture, specifically in desert cities. Houses, mosques, temples with mesmerizing domes.
Another famous structure of Marvast is called Gumbadi, which means dome-shaped. It belongs to the Ilkhanid era. It is a mysterious place because it is believed to be a mausoleum of a local governor or a popular figure, but there's no evidence of a gravestone inside the structure. Marvast is relatively a big city and our time is limited. So the best way to get a glimpse of all the potentials of this city, and especially in the field of agriculture, is to check out this fair. And of course, the inauguration ceremony starts with a very unique and special dance called Raqs Dastmal, which is a traditional dance of the people of Marvast region.
In every corner of this world, because of industrial farming and agriculture, eating healthy is becoming a big trend, and people are demanding more and more healthy foods and products. We're lucky in Iran, because we just need to get out of the big cities, and we have access to all the healthy and natural foods and products. There, they're definitely delicious and tasty and healthy for us.
The main objectives of the organizers of this fair is to showcase their potentials in different fields, and of course, to encourage visitors to buy and consume locally grown, healthy, and natural products from the fertile land of Marvast. Hallways with different stands and access to hundreds of products, such as sweets, breads, cheeses, chocolates, honey, nuts, and so on. For us, coming from different regions, some tastes are very unique, and some products are very strange. At the end of the day, local people of Marvast and tourists come together at a special ceremony to share some joyful moments. This might be the end of all events dedicated to this city and its people. But the charm, hospitality, and friendliness of the people of Marvast never end. Shahryar Azimi for Iran.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
from Sana'a. Hello and welcome to another program of Your Window into Yemen, where this week we will be discussing all of the latest military events that have unfolded in the country, including today's latest attack whereby the Yemeni army launched a new hypersonic missile. I am joined today with Abdel Gawi Al-Jarbani. He is a political activist and an organizer in the Friday demonstrations that you see taken to the streets every week. Abdel Gawi, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure to be with you.
I'd like to start first by asking you, regarding the military operations, including today's military operation, we woke up to news and reports that the Yemeni army has launched an attack on Ben Gurion Airport in occupied Palestine. Now, this was an attack where they launched a new hypersonic missile that was able to bypass U.S. and Israeli security defenses and was able to hit its target, leading to the injuries of a number of Israeli settlers. There was lots of damage, and we've seen footage of the attack taking place. Why do you think the Yemeni armed forces have been successful in continuing to escalate their military attacks and in continuing to launch attacks despite the U.S. air raids across Yemen?
So, first of all, I think the reasons why we think that the Yemeni forces armed have been successful in their operations for many reasons. First, we are with Allah. And of course, Allah is with us. Second, we are not fighting for wealth, power, politics. We are standing with the just cause. Mm-hmm. So we are like defending our land, our oppressed people and downtrodden, our dignity. So we believe with certainty that only victory comes from Allah alone. Mm-hmm. And as the Holy Quran says, if you support Allah, He will support you and make your feet firm. So, Alhamdulillah. Yemen's position is rooted in moral and humanitarian principles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and continues to, like, it's like represents the movement of our Prophet Muhammad. Peace and blessings be upon him and his family.
Why do you think today to the reports today of a new hypersonic missile? The Yemeni armed forces uses the Palestinian 2 hypersonic missile. This is the hypersonic missile that the Yemeni armed forces have been launching for many months towards Israel. However, military experts are saying a new hypersonic missile was used today with a more advanced, powerful warhead, which delivers, devastating damages wherever it lands. Why do you think the Yemeni armed forces have been able to advance militarily? Why does the world continue to witness more advanced, state-of-the-art military capability from Yemen, despite all of the hostile aggressions on the Yemeni people?
You know, silence in the face of what is happening in Gaza, mm-hmm, may open the door to even more serious violations. Mm-hmm. And these events are part of agenda that threatens the rights and stability of the entire region.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And do you think that the Israel posing this threat to the entire region. Is this why the Yemeni protesters, they continue to take to the streets every single Friday? Now, I met you at the Friday demonstrations. I see you taking to the streets every single Friday at the demonstrations. You're very active. You're there with the protesters. You're filming. You're interviewing a lot of the protesters, the officials who are at these demonstrations. Why? What can you tell us about the experience of these Friday demonstrations, where the millions of Yemenis, they take to the streets in defiance to U.S. and Israeli hegemony in the region?
Well, Friday in Yemen is a momentous day, as the Yemeni people articulate their future vision and unwavering sense dedicated to nation building through self-reliance and steadfast in upholding their principles in support of our brethren in Akki Palestine. Mm-hmm. Yemeni people are pledged allegiance to their national leadership, endorsing its decisions and policies. Mm. Our people are left with no choice but to live with dignity or perish in pursuit of it. So every Friday, we are trying to send message. You know, as the Yemeni leader, our leader, Sayyid Abdul Malik Badruddin al-Houthi, in his like last speech, when he said that when you go to, fill the squares and every Friday, you are like making slab to the Americans. And honestly speaking,
it's a slap in the face to the Americans.
Yeah, we are slapping the Americans by our. When we go to the squares in Sab'in, in every city in around the Yemen.
Well, it's because you're taken to the streets every Friday.
Yeah.
But you know, the U.S. was expecting the Yemenis to be in fear. You know, before they launched these operations, Donald Trump was warning that all hell is going to rain down upon Yemen, and that he will destroy the Ansar Allah movement. I think when you mentioned that it's a slap in the face to the U.S. because it is, when you consider how the response has been from the other parts of the Muslim world, from nations and from people in Saudi Arabia and in Jordan and elsewhere in the region, they've, for the most part, they've obeyed the U.S. agenda. They've obeyed the Israeli agenda, the expansion of they're trying to establish this Israeli empire across the Muslim world, and we're seeing them do that and trying to do that in Palestine and Lebanon and in Syria. So you talk about the slap in the face. What we're also witnessing is a slap in the face militarily. More and more people continue to take to the streets every Friday. Millions upon millions of people have taken part in these demonstrations to voice their support with Palestine, to continue their defiance of the Israeli and U.S. military operations across the Muslim world. But now I think the situation is getting more serious, because now the message that was delivered today in the airstrike that was launched from Yemen is that Yemen can hit anywhere that they want in occupied Palestine, and these hypersonic missiles have advanced warheads that are able to deliver more impact, and they're able to sever a lot of the Israeli infrastructure.
Yeah, of course. And the recent U.S. attacks are being framed as punishment for Yemen's position over the past 18 months. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to scare us.
Right.
And while the blockade in Gaza continues and the humanitarian aid is obstructed, Yemeni operations will not cease. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we will continue.
What about the Friday demonstrations that you're always taking a part of?
Yeah, I mean, we are trying to send messages to the Americans and Zionists. Uh-huh. So from here, I many times I'm trying to send a message to them. Yeah, to the Americans and the Zionists, our message is clear. Yemen is the core of the Arab world, mm-hmm. bearing a solemn of responsibility towards Arab causes. While you may champion falsehoods and commit genocide, Yemen will not falter in support of the just cause. Leave our nation and its affairs be. And if history's lessons escape you, Yemen's geographic today will impart a lesson you will not soon forget.
Mm-hmm. obviously, you've been part of the Friday demonstrations, and you've also witnessed the airstrikes on the capital, Sana'a. You, as a family man, siblings, children, the ordinary Yemeni lifestyle. What do you tell your children? A lot of people, they wonder, people in the West and people in other parts of the world who never experienced war, they've never experienced airstrikes, they most likely will never have to. What do you tell your children in such a situation where they hear the fighter jets, they hear the airstrikes, they hear the massive explosions? What do you tell them when your child asks you to, you know, what's happening? Why? What are these bombs? Why are these explosions happening in Yemen? What do you tell them?
First of all, we as Yemenis are well prepared, and we are preparing our new generations to struggle if the, if we are forced into the war. And we tell that our children, I mean, they are trying to scare us. They want to stop us from helping, from standing with Gaza. I mean, they want to stop us from helping, from stopping the genocide.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't care. You know, even the children, I mean, we go to demonstrations or protests. I mean, every single family here in Yemen, we're not afraid. Even though they are trying to stop us, to make us afraid by their missiles, we're not afraid.
But what do you tell your children?
I mean,
when they ask you, when they get scared, when they hear the airstrikes, what do you tell them? What do you tell them? Like, how do you explain to them what is happening?
The happening that happening in Yemen, that we support Gaza and don't be afraid. I mean, America, it's like a mirror through, as the Sayyid Hussein Badruddin al-Houthi described the America. So, and we have like the Quranic vision. We have faith. So I think they cannot affect in us
mm-hmm.
by their attacks.
And how has the experience been just to be part of the Friday demonstrations and to be part of your political activism in Yemen? How do you feel as a person, as an activist who's representing this movement, or being a member of this movement that is supporting Palestine, that is supporting Palestine in bringing an end to this genocide, as a Yemeni, as a human being, as a Muslim, how does that make you feel? Do you feel that you're doing the right thing, or do you feel that maybe there's other ways of achieving support for Palestine that doesn't necessarily have to mean being active in supporting the military operations or taking part in the Friday demonstrations? Because the reason why I ask this is because there's some Muslim scholars, so-called Muslim scholars, or there's some people who claim to be following the religion of Islam, prominent figures. You hear them on social media, you see them on TV,
mm-hmm.
on a lot of these channels, and they don't support what Yemen is doing, actually. They don't support what Yemen is doing. And the reason for that is they say that it might lead to further chaos. What do you think about that?
Alhamdulillah, first of all, we as Yemenis, we feel proud. When we go to Sabin, we consider it as like kind of jihad. It's kind of supporting the oppressed and downtrodden in Palestine in general and in Gaza, like particularly. And like history, we record that the exceptional Yemeni leader, Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi, stood alongside with the people of Gaza. I mean, while the alongside with his people, taking a stance of truth, honor, loyalty, religious and moral commitment, despite facing the dirtiest and the most severe forms of conspiracy from the Arab and Yemeni tracers.
Mm-hmm.
Yemeni, like history, we record that Ansarullah, they did everything in their power and they keep doing their best to support the oppressed and downtrodden. And we really like feel proud of that. And alhamdulillah, it's like...
Why are there some Arab leaders and some of these so-called scholars who are not uttering... they're not saying anything. They're not even supporting Yemen's position with Palestine. They're not even supporting Palestine. on the contrary, a lot of people are accusing them of being agents or, bowing down to Israeli demands. What is Yemeni's people's vision towards such figures who are claiming to be Muslim, but are in actuality supporting the Israeli agenda?
Unfortunately, I can't describe them that they are stupid. I'm sorry for that, but they are so stupid because, you know, silence in the face of what is happening in Gaza, Syria, Lebanon, mm-hmm. is like it's a dangerous silence in the face of what is happening there may open the door to even more serious violations. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like open the door to that these serious violations threatens the entire region, not only Yemen, not only Gaza, Palestine, Syria. It threatens the entire region. They have to think well that Israel is dangerous, mm-hmm. and we have to be careful. I mean, if we're not, they can't choose to express, they can't to make protest, they can't to speak anything. I mean, not only helping by military helping like the Yemeni. Mm-hmm. Opposite, like the Yemeni stance,
right.
But they can't even go to streets. They can't
protest.
To protest and make the demonstrations. Unfortunately, they have to wake up.
How come they're not taking to the streets, like people in Jordan or in Saudi Arabia and UAE? How come they're not taking to the streets? Is it because they don't want to, or is it because their government is not allowing them?
I'm not sure about it. If they really want to, they can do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the government, it's not like a big it's like a big problem. I mean, nobody can stop them from going to the streets.
Well, we've seen in Jordan protesters take to the streets to condemn the genocide in Palestine, but then we've seen the Jordanian government, their security forces, they also took to the streets not to protest but to stop the protesters or to contain the demonstrations in support of Palestine.
Yeah, they have to work well. They have to think well. They have to go to streets. Being silenced is a big mistake. Mm-hmm. I mean, what they are waiting for? I mean, in Gaza, more than 50,000 people were killed. Mm-hmm. So what are they waiting for if they are not going now?
Well, they don't want that to happen to them. Maybe if they get involved, then maybe Israel's going to attack them. But they don't want that to happen.
What's happening in Syria nowadays? Mm-hmm. Israel is attacking Syria, and I mean they are not doing anything. Mm-hmm. Hamas, I mean they said that Tufan al-Aqsa. I mean, make Israel to attack Hamas. So what about Syria? They did nothing. They have been attacked. I mean,
and Allah would say that Israel sort of backed the new government in Syria. And even the leader of the government in the new government in Syria,
yeah.
He stated that basically, they don't have a problem with Israel, and that their intention is not to go to war with Israel, and they've actually they've cut the supply chain from Iran to the axis of resistance through Syria, and I think the plan, a lot of these leaders who come to power, for some reason they think that the way to stay in power, after they start putting on suits, they start putting on suits and they start to. Yeah. Engage in politics, they think that the only way to stay in politics, they think that the right way to build a country is to first get the blessing and the grace of America and Israel. And I think that's what's happened in Syria, where I think the new government there has fooled themselves into believing that as long as we're good with Israel and America, we'll stay in power. They'll support us. And then after they establish a strong and powerful country, they can start to implement their own policy, and they can start to help Palestine. I think that's what they were saying. They said, we have to build our nation first, and then we'll help Palestine. But Israel is not wasting any time. Look what they're doing in Syria. Even though there is no opposition, coming from the new Syrian government, and they're still being attacked.
Al-Julani thinks that being silenced, making him, protecting Syria from Israeli attacks. But unfortunately, they are attacking Syria, and he's silent. He's doing nothing. And he's saying in every
he's saying
we are friends with Israel. We don't have any problems with Israel.
Well, he's saying that there's a threat from Iran, though.
Look.
Yeah. He's saying Israel is attacking Syria, but the threat somehow is coming from Iran and its other groups that support Iran. Can you make sense of that?
Yeah, even if he cut the relationships with Iran, if he cut the relationships with Muslim countries, if he is trying to make relationships with America, with Israel, with the West countries, they don't care. But even if you are standing against Israel, you will be attacked. So why you are silent? Until this moment, he's doing nothing.
And as the Quran has made it very clear, never will the Jews and the Christians approve of you.
Yeah,
they will never accept you until you follow their way. And Jews and Christians here, it's referring to the Jewish and Christian alliance, the Zio-Christian alliance, where basically you have these two groups who claim to be following these religions, but in actuality they're forming this alliance under the banners of Christianity and under the banners of Judaism, when in actuality they've rebelled against their own teachings. They've rebelled against their own teachings, and they have this worldly agenda to establish power, to spread chaos and destruction and corruption across the world. And I think people are calling this alliance the Zionist alliance. And it consists of people who they don't adhere or are dedicated to a specific religion as they are dedicated to establishing their new world order, which starts with taking over Palestine, taking over the Holy Land, Al-Quds, and then spreading from there to establish the so-called Greater Israel. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? What do you think about this alliance? And what do you think about the Quran making it very clear that these people will never accept the Muslims until the Muslims basically become disbelievers?
What is the benefit the benefit from cutting the relationships between Muslims and make it like, for example, in Syria, they are cutting the relationships with Iran because they are Shia. They are Muslims, and they are making a good relationships with Jewish, Christian people. I'm not sure. It's like a disaster. In Saudi Arabia, in the UAE, like big Muslim countries, they are making bad relationships with Muslims, and they are trying to make a good relationship with America. For example, Saudi Arabia, they pay like billions of dollars to America. What for? Why don't like Saudi Arabia? Saudi Arabia and the Emirates, they give charity for poor Muslim countries. They don't, but they pay for America, they pay for Israel. So they are far away from Holy Quran. I can't describe that.
What would your message as a Yemeni and as an activist, what would your message be to the American people? And what would your message also be to the American government, to Donald Trump, regarding the war with Yemen?
A message to the American people. Your government is contributing to genocide against the Palestinian people by submitting to Donald Trump's orders to militarize the Red Sea. Israel involves you on its own problems. So the solution to stopping the Red Sea operations is to stop the aggression against Gaza and lift the siege. Simply, very simple. This is the easiest solution. But if your government, like if the America wants to submit to Israel's orders, you will see that. We will teach America and Israel a lesson that they will not soon forget.
What do you think that lesson is going to be in the future? Do you think that it will be involve perhaps a military ground invasion on Israel, or will it involve more hypersonic missiles, more powerful weapons being launched at Israel and U.S. targets in the Red Sea?
You know, Yemen's today, it's not like yesterday's Yemen. And Yemen's tomorrow, it's not like Yemen's today. So mm-hmm. Yemen is going to be different. And mm-hmm. our missiles will target them. Mm-hmm. Our protests will unsettle them. And our armed forces stand vigilant against them.
Well, Abdul Gawi, I want to thank you for joining us in this program. Thanks for joining us in this week's program of Your Window into Yemen. Please be sure to join us next week as we have another guest to discuss all of the unfolding events in the country. Until then, stay safe and stay informed.
Faqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by the late Ayatollah Hakhshanas. Please stay tuned. There is a great hadith addressing the three awaiters of Imam al-Mahdi. In that hadith, Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam, the fourth Shia infallible Imam, states, "The true Shias do not feel the absence of Imam al-Mahdi among themselves." This sentence of Imam al-Sajjad means that even when Imam al-Mahdi is in occultation, the Shia's souls and hearts are connected with the Imam and they feel this presence if they are the true lovers of the Imam. Also, according to authentic Islamic references, at the time of major occultation of Imam al-Mahdi, Allah will bestow the true lovers of the last Imam the true knowledge about him, so that they don't feel the absence of the Imam. In this way, occultation does not mean absolute absence of the Imam. He will only be absent from the eyes of the people who do not have knowledge about him. Therefore, if we truly believe in Imam al-Mahdi, Allah will give us the knowledge and power to connect with the Imam. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by the late Ayatollah Haqshanas. To find more about this program and also our other programs, please visit our website at iranradio.ir. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.